If then you have been raised with Christ, seek the things that are above, where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things that are above, not on the things that are on earth. For you have died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. Put to death, therefore, what is earthly in you: sexual immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. On the account of these, the wrath of God is coming. In these you too once walked, when you were living in them. But now you must put them all away: anger, wrath, malice, slander, and obscene talk from your mouth. Do not lie to one another, seeing that you have put off the old self with its practices and have put on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge after the image of its creator. Here there is no Greek and Jew, circumcised and uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave, free, but Christ is all and in all. Put on, then, as God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, compassionate hearts, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience, bearing with one another, and if one has a complaint against another, forgiving each other, as the Lord has forgiven you, so you also must forgive. And above all these, put on love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony. And let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, to which indeed you were called in one body, and be thankful. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly, teaching and admonishing one another in all wisdom, singing psalms and hymns and spiritual songs with thankfulness in your hearts to God. And whatever you do, in word or deed, do everything in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. Thanks be to God. This is the word of the Lord. Please be seated.
Not too long ago, a man walked into my office who I had met a couple times, mostly just introduction and maybe shared a little bit, talked about where he's from and how he got here. But in this instance, when I saw him, when he came walking into my office, there was something different about him. He was burdened. You could see it. You could feel it. There was a heaviness to him. And when I asked him what was going on, he began to share his story, his situation. And his situation involved a family that was divided. And not only was this family divided, but he explained how it had become that way. And it was in large part through his actions that he was responsible, that he was guilty. And that as a result of this guilt, he was experiencing this division. That's what guilt does, right? It divides us. It cuts us off. We heard Steve talking about this guilt that he was carrying around and how he was isolated and alone. That when we act selfishly, when we do things we know God's not calling us to do, that we just know we shouldn't be doing, oftentimes the person that we commit the offense against has pulled back. And then we feel the guilt and we pull back ourselves. Then we start getting desperate, right? Because it's heavy. Sometimes we even think we can cast accusations, because normally the other person's guilty too, right? Very rarely is it completely one-sided. And for sure there's a time to, when a relationship is being reconciled, to talk about everything. But these attempts to eliminate our guilt, to get rid of this burden by accusing the other person, What does it do? It just makes the divide greater, right? Person pulls back, we're more frustrated. Pretty soon we're just entirely separated. And then here's another thing guilt does to just further the isolation. We start believing we are uniquely guilty. My friend in that conversation in the office said, "Why are other families so normal?" I thought, I haven't met every family, but my experience is there are no families that are normal, as you are thinking. But this is what we do, right? When we're guilty, now we're the only one. Now we're really isolated. I know that this has happened to me. I remember the first time I walked into a Celebrate Recovery. I was living in Southern California at Saddleback Church, and I walked into this Celebrate Recovery, and there were 1,000 people there. I wasn't the only guilty one. I honestly went there thinking, I am uniquely guilty. But we're not. But this thought, this belief, this lie, it isolates us further. And then we carry this guilt and this isolation into every relationship we have, right? It affects them all. We don't even know what it's doing, but we do see patterns of how we continue to offend people or push people away, how relationships continue to break apart, sometimes with very similar patterns. We bring our guilt into these relationships. They're breaking and we don't even know why. We're not even sure what's going on. What's wrong with me? We're guilty. And our guilt divides. I was praying for my kids, last week, the week before. And as I'm praying for them, they're both off at school. So I was praying for them, Lord, be with them in their studies. And as I was praying for them, do you know what entered my head? This guilt over how I had wasted my time, wasted my gifts when I was at college, right? We all have some gifts, whatever I had, wasted at college. And I'm feeling guilty. And I didn't even know I still felt that. That's a long time ago. But what did hit me is that it's interesting how so often I'll be having a conversation with my kids about their school, and it gets strangely intense. I'm satisfied with their efforts from what I can see. I'm pleased. Where's this intensity coming from? As I'm praying, I'm thinking, am I bringing this guilt into these relationships too? This intensity, I'm not even knowing about it. It's creating a barrier. Have I convinced you yet? You're probably convinced before you sat down. Guilt divides. And a guilty conscience is never done dividing. It just keeps setting us off, isolating us, cutting off relationships. We continue to do damage. Oftentimes, the first divide that we feel is with family and friends. That's usually what moves us to begin talking to people, right? Like these relationships are falling apart, and it can't happen. It's unacceptable. Usually the first division that we feel is with family and friends. But what Paul tells us is, and Jesus, is the first division is actually with God. That this is where it all starts. And this is where we have to continue to go. We have to have this guilt that exists, this separation, this alienation between us and God removed. Isn't it interesting in the Lord's Prayer The prayer that Jesus gave us as a model, there's this daily prayer, right? Give us today our daily bread. What else is daily? And forgive us of our sins. Like, remove this guilt so that we're not divided. This is the division, the primary division. So what do we do? What do? We carry this guilt. We're convinced it divides. We see it causing division with family and friends. And maybe you're convinced that, yes, my first division is actually between myself and God. What do I do? Jesus said, believe. Believe that he is who he said he is. In John chapter 3, verses 17 and 18, right after that famous verse, John 3:16, 3:17 and 18, he says, I didn't come to this world to condemn it. I came to save it. Whoever believes in me is not condemned, but whoever does not believe stands condemned already. Jesus knew that we already had this separation, this guilt between us and God, that he didn't have to come to condemn us. We did it ourselves. We cut ourselves off from God. And what Jesus says is all you have to do is believe. That if we come to him believing that he is who he says he is, we can give him our guilt, and he'll take it. That what we do is we come to him believing, we come to him confessing, and what Jesus does is he removes the guilt. He takes it. It's like Jesus has a big bag, and he's holding this big bag, and we come to him and we say, will you take this? And he takes it. He says, I will take it. And he keeps filling up the bag. Will you take this too? Will you take this too? It's a daily thing, right? Lord, will you take it? Will you still take it? And he keeps putting it in the bag. Do you know what he does with the bag? He takes all that we have. He takes the bag. He gives it a big spin. And he throws it over the horizon. So often I feel like when we confess, we think we can reach back in the bag and take our guilt back out. Psalm 103:12 says, as far as the east is from the west, so far has he removed our transgressions from us. When you see that bag of guilt sailing over the horizon, it is my hope that you feel peace. That this is what Jesus does. He removes the guilt. We continue to think that we need to ask forgiveness, or we can, over and over for the same thing. We don't. When we feel shame over things that we've done that we're guilty of, we confess. If we're still feeling shame after we're confessing, that's not God. That's the enemy. That's you grabbing on to a lie or making up a lie. That is not God. When I had this feeling of guilt over my college years, I got to tell you, I was actually a little surprised that I was feeling it. I don't remember if I prayed for forgiveness for those years yet. I got to assume that I did. I'm not saying since we don't remember, we can't confess our sin. I did. Lord, forgive me, that was a waste. I don't know if I ever confessed this, but I know if it comes back again, I don't have to keep confessing it. Now, that's true with God. That's not necessarily true with people. When we're dealing with family and friends or strangers that we've hurt and we've confessed to them and they come back and they need to hear it again, I think the best thing we can do is get humble and say it again. Maybe I didn't say it in a way that you could really hear it. Let me try again. I was wrong. I'm sorry. Will you forgive me? This may be something we have to do regularly or repeatedly with people. But with God, it's once. And it's removed. Guilt is a giant obstacle to movement. Jesus removes it. I have another question. What else does Jesus do? And maybe it seems a little bit presumptuous to ask, what else? I mean, after all, he takes our sin, our mistakes, our selfishness, our guilt, and he removes it entirely. It seems a bit audacious to ask, and what else? But Colossians 3 is a what else. What else does Jesus do? He doesn't just remove the obstacle. He doesn't just remove the guilt of the past. He removes the division. Jesus unites us with himself. And get this, with heaven. Jesus removes our past transgressions, but then Jesus does even more. I think growing up, I just heard, I don't know if it's how it was said to me, but it's how I heard it. I heard a lot more about the cross and forgiveness, which is essential. But there is also this piece of resurrection and new life. That the cross and the resurrection, they go together. That Jesus removes my guilt. And additionally, Jesus unites himself. He unites us with himself and with heaven. It's right there in Colossians 3. Paul is obsessed with this. He can't say it enough. It's like he wants us to remember. Colossians 3:1, it begins with, since then. At least that's the NIV. In the ESV, it's, if you have been raised, and he's assuming it's true in this case, you've been raised with Christ. That's interesting language, right? Raised with him? In what sense? Well, we're united with him. If we've been raised with Christ, set your hearts on things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Seek heaven. Set your mind on things above, not on earthly things. Colossians 3:3, for you died, and your life is now hidden with Christ in God. Interesting language, right? He pulls us right in. The division, the guilt is gone, the obstacle is gone, and then he pulls us into this very special circle, right? With Christ in God. Verse 4 says, when Christ, who is your life, appears. He's our life. It's all new. Everything's changed. The old is gone, new life, his spirit, his life in me. Jesus said it like this, right? I am the vine, you are the branches. Remain in me. The life of the vine is in the branch. The branch is in the vine. It's all new. It is supernatural as the resurrection of Christ himself. That in a very real sense, it's all changed. So now, what do we do? Okay, before we're saying, what do we do when we have this guilt? Well, we come to him. We believe. We confess. And what does he do? He removes it and the division and unites himself with us. We are united with him. Now, what do? When the obstacle of guilt has been removed, there's a new way for us to live, right? We're not just over here like how it was, like I guess the sin's gone in here, I'll just keep trying on my own. It's all new. We're united with Christ. And not just with Christ, but with heaven. In Colossians 1, verse 5, Paul says, I'm so excited about your faith and love because of this hope that's been laid up for you in heaven. Colossians 1, 20 says, Jesus is reconciling all things in heaven and on earth. He's bringing heaven and earth together. He brings it together. In Ephesians 2, 6, it says it even more explicitly. It says, you are dead in your transgressions, but he has raised you with Christ and seated you with him in heavenly places. It's us united with him, and in a very real sense, with him in heaven. Ephesians 1 says you've been blessed with every heavenly blessing. What does that mean? It's Paul continuing to hammer home this truth, this reality. We're not the same. Guilt has been miraculously removed, and we have been miraculously raised to new life, united with Christ in heaven. That we are on a new journey, a new movement, that we're with him there, and we know where this journey ends. It ends with Christ. So how are we to move? We move with our feet on the earth and our minds on heaven. And this takes practice. We actually train ourselves to think this way. It's why Paul gives the command to think like this. In verse 2, it isn't a suggestion. I know none of us like to be told necessarily what to do. But Paul's given a command. It's this imperative. It's important. It's critical. It's needed. You can't live this life that we want to live apart from it. And the command is, set your mind on things above. Think on these things. Sometimes I think as a church we've handed over this practice of meditation and we've decided that, you know, only the enemy gets it. We think of meditation often. We can think of the ways it's abused. But there's a healthy aspect of meditating, of thinking on truth that Paul commands us to take. The psalmist says, I meditate on your law day and night. Paul says, think on things above. In 2 Corinthians 4, verse 18, he said it like this. Fix your eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. For what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. It's 2 Corinthians 4, 18. And do you know why he said that? Because he was talking to the church in Corinth, and he knew they were going through hard things. And he knew, you won't make it if you don't think on this. Before he says, fix your eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen, he tells them, look, I know. Outwardly, we're wasting away. Life's hard. Death's here. Our bodies break down. Tragic things happen. That we carry this treasure we have in Christ in jars of clay. That outwardly, we're wasting away. Yet inwardly, we are being renewed. Day by day, moment by moment, these light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So, fix your eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. In between services, a man came up to me and he said, my mother is 94 and she's been dying for a long time. He said, I don't know what to do. At this point, you know, they had to put water in her mouth. She's any moment now. He said, what I'm planning to do is just go to her and I'm going to play for her some of her favorite Christian songs. What else can I do? And I thought, and I told him, I think that's a great idea. That's what Colossians 3 looks like. We're moving through difficult situations. Our feet are on the earth, and it's hard sometimes. But this is not the end. Everybody talks about life being a journey, but oftentimes they talk about it as if, like, who knows where it ends? Who knows where it goes? Not like that for us. We're on a journey and we know where it ends. And so when we're dealing with people who are going through intense struggles and when we're going through it, we fix our eyes on heaven, which is actually where we reside even now. Philippians 3:20 says we're citizens of heaven. That's who we are. And as we fix our eyes on this truth and reality, we're able to move through this life with that whole list of qualities that Paul put in there at the beginning at about verse 12 through 17. That this is our only hope, with our minds fixed on him, our only hope to be compassionate, and kind, and humble, and meek, patient, forgiving even as Christ forgives, loving, laying down our lives even as Christ lays down his lives. That this is the practice. We have to zero in on what's really going on. That even right now, no matter what we came with, we can envision Christ seated at the right hand of the Father. One last question. What do we do for those who are still experiencing the pain that comes with the division guilt creates? What do we do for those who are still carrying big burdens of guilt? That actually everything's changed for us, right? We're now no obstacles to movement. We confess, we're forgiven. Move us, Lord. He's going to move us so that we help those who haven't found this freedom yet. We move people to heaven as we wait for Jesus on earth. That Jesus is coming back. That's verse 4, right? It says, when Christ, who is your life, appears, you too will appear with him in glory. In verse 5, it says, so put to death everything that belongs to that earthly way, sinful nature, sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires, greed, get rid of it. Otherwise, you deal with God's wrath. Because of these, the wrath of God is coming. That Jesus is coming back. And he's coming to embrace all that are his into glory. But there is judgment too. And people who are still crushed under the burden of guilt, they're actually feeling that judgment right now. So how do we help them? I want to say that if we'll move through life with our eyes on heaven and love well, many of the people who are burdened by guilt, they'll come to us. They'll trust us. And they'll share their pain and their guilt with us. When they do this, we move them to heaven. Now, I want to say we move them up to heaven. We don't blow them up to heaven. So it's, I think the way the conversation generally goes, is someone comes and begins to share with you their burden. And as they're sharing their burden, there's sometimes this temptation to remove the burden away from them like we could even do that. And we want to do it by saying something like, well, that's not so bad, or that person probably deserved it. We don't do them any favors when we do that. When we're hearing people's burdens, we just hear them for what they are. Real burdens. That the burdens, the burden of guilt that they're feeling, it's real. And if we listen long enough, they just tell us that. And then the next thing I think it's important to do, and actually if they don't know this about you, they probably wouldn't even have ever come to you with their burden. But we have to communicate to them, I relate. I get it. Like, I understand. I've done dumb things too. I have experienced the burden, the weight of guilt, and the division and pain that it causes. I can relate. And it doesn't become a contest, right? Like, who's more guilty? And you start going on with your big long list. But just an acknowledgement that we can relate. And we can relate, right? We get it. We've all been forgiven of this $1 billion debt. We can relate. And then there's this last piece that I think is the easiest piece to skip. We simply ask them a question. Invite relationship. And it's a question. You know, when my friend came into the office and he described his burden, I asked him at the end, I think what needs to happen is you need to let Jesus lead you out of this. Like, you're just like the rest of us. This situation's too hard. It's too dynamic. You can't figure it out, but he can. Would you like to surrender your life to Christ? Or however you want to say that. He said no. I hate when they say no. He said no, and he left. But he came back this past week, and when he came into the office, he said, last time I saw you, I was on the fence. And he said, well, maybe I wasn't even on the fence. Maybe I was just, like, not near the fence. He said, but I'm way on the other side now. That on his own, he had just continued to think about what was going on in his life and what Christ says. And he surrendered his life. He invited relationship. This is what Jesus is doing. Jesus unites us. He unites us with himself and with heaven. And he calls us to remember these things and move with our feet on the earth, but our minds on heaven. And as we move freely, free from the obstacle of guilt, he moves us into the lives of others that we actually, by his grace and power, become an asset in moving people to heaven, even as we wait for Jesus to come to earth. Alex is going to come up and lead us in a song of reflection. And as he does, I'd like to encourage you all to consider one of three things as the song is played. You can either confess whatever guilt is weighing you down and know that God removes it and unites himself with you. Or you can simply envision heaven as you sing this song. And maybe lastly, pray that God might bring somebody into your life who you can help move to heaven as you wait for Jesus on earth. Because what Jesus does is Jesus unites us with himself and with heaven. Amen.